Welcome back to the Wide World of Wargaming, Age of Sigmar podcast. Here with you is your host, Alex Gonzalez. I also have hosts Garrett, John, and Matthew on the line. We also have a welcome and honored guest. We have Reese Robbins from the Independent Tournament Circuit with us today. Reese, how are you doing and what's on your workbench?
Good, man. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And right now I'm drinking a red beer.
Descriptive.
Yeah, well, it's a spicy V8 with a Coors Light, and we were celebrating after the Broadside Bash last night, and I celebrated a little too hard. I needed something to help me kind of ease into the evening a little bit.
Coors Light, my man.
Hey, man, it goes so good with the V8. It's like a poor man's Bloody Mary.
I love Coors Light, and everyone on here gives me endless amounts
of
shit
beer,
for it. So.
Right? It's light, it's nice, you know, it's not a classy beer.
No, it's
anything,
hydrating because it's 70% water. It ticks all the boxes.
Exactly.
Perfect, perfect. Garrett, what's on your workbench?
Well, my workbench is cluttered as hell because I'm currently working on moving into my new house, and so we're packing up everything. So next week I will be in my new place. So yeah, I'm not really working on anything because I'm busy packing, and I don't have space to work on anything. So I am not drinking anything either because all of my cups are packed away. So John, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, I decided to have all of, I was a little bit tired of you guys making me look like an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah, that's on us.
I'm drinking some water. Of course, it is in my Las Vegas Open 2019 glass. And let me see.
I'm drinking out of my LVO 2016 glass. That's funny.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned the LVO 2016, Reese, because water actually wasn't enough for me. So I did grab my Las Vegas Open 2016 shot glass, and I'm also having a little bit of the monkey tail scotch over here, too.
So you like this.
Perfect. And Matthew, is it PBR today on your workbench?
It is. I'm drinking PBR. I am working on a gigantic pink breast scorpion. Very pink, very large 40K model, and messing around with a Dragon Ogre Shaggoth for one and only Reese Robbins.
Ooh.
It's been super cool. The old metal Shaggoths are such cool models.
Yes,
they have
sir.
Tiny arms and huge
it's
heads.
It's looking good, dude. I'm stoked.
Yeah, it's like a weird unproportional T-Rex, but then it has like a lizard body. It's just good. Yeah, it weighs like 17 pounds.
Yeah.
We share one. It's about 1,000 miles apart, but
yeah, it's super heavy. It's for my Beast of Chaos army.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. So in a way, what's on your workbench is on Matthew's workbench.
Yeah.
There you go. It's a real big one. Perfect. I have just coffee on my workbench today because can't stop, won't stop. But I don't have any hobby projects. I pretty much have my army list locked in until the great Grimghast Reaper culling of
purge.
2019.
The purge of Grimghast.
The great Reaper purge of 2019. You're not wrong. So I'm not here to fight that at all. Okay. Well, you know, we are going to be having a discussion today with Reese. And I think that right now is a perfect opportunity for us to ask a little bit about the exact list that we were referencing. You are starting a Beast of Chaos.
Yeah,
army,
I'm moving at a freaking glacial pace on it, unfortunately, but that's just because I've been so busy and it's a big army. But I've finally had a chance to actually play it a few times and it's super duper fun. It's a weird army because I get my teeth kicked in, but I win the mission every time. So my opponent's having fun until they realize that they're losing the game.
They have, I think it's kind of like a lot of people kind of poo-poo a little bit on it, but they're the summoning ability they have to just kind of bring in like dorky units off the table edge every turn for a couple of whatever their summon points are. It's so good, and I feel like people don't realize how good that is.
Yeah, I start with all my hard units on the table, and then every turn, pretty much every turn, like 66% of the time, I bring in a little wimpy unit, and they just go run onto an objective and sit there. And yeah, I try to get gores because a gore with a shield has a 4-up save in combat. So they're actually reasonably durable. Like, they don't kill anything. But I've had them sit on an objective for, like, 3 turns before they finally get chewed up, and by that time they've been reinforced, you know, once or twice. So right. I've found them to be excellent for winning games. And then I usually take two chimeras, and they do a lot of damage before they get, as long as right. you can avoid getting degraded.
Chimeras are brutal.
Yeah, especially when you run two and you have them go as a pair.
Oh God!
I'm like, oh, here's you just blast people. You know, like it's really good.
That would be really good to kill those named characters that you just need to eliminate, whether it's like a Death Army or a Fire Slayer Army, like we were talking about before recording today. Super.
Yeah, useful. They're really good, and I use the Saigor too, even though a lot of people don't like him. But because everybody has a wizard in their army. And when he's twin linked against them, so he throws that rock on him, like pretty frequently, he'll squish him in one or two shots. So I found him to be really good. Plus he gets two, unbinds. So I actually really like him a lot, and he's pretty cheap.
Not everybody has a wizard.
most armies do, right? And they're usually really squishy. So it's like, if you connect with that rock, even if they have minus one, you know, you're usually going to splat them.
Oh yeah, that sounds pretty solid. It's hard to imagine a top player not taking a wizard in a competitive list, really.
You know, maybe somebody should learn what the endless spell phase is like. Maybe cast a couple
theoretically
spells,
like if someone was playing on the top table at LVO and then didn't know what the endless spells did because they don't use wizards and they lost, that would be a bummer, theoretically speaking.
Theoretically.
We know
Reese, how many casters do you have in your army, or guys with artifact of power? I'd be interested in, because I know that Places of Arcane Power is a mission that can really hurt certain armies that don't take casters and lose their one caster to a Slaanesh Exalted.
Cool. So we're just gonna do shit on that episode real quick. So.
right now I'm taking two Bray Shamans, Dragon Ogre Shaggoth, and I take an artifact on my Doombull, who is a fucking I'm sorry. Hopefully it's a adult language friendly podcast. I apologize.
It is. You're good.
And,
you're good
now. He is such a beast, dude. I usually give him an artifact of power. It's so much fun when he wrecks somebody's hero and then eats them and gets wounds back. They're just like, what? I'm like, yup. Mm-hmm. And he's going back for more.
Dude, the fact that whole army has inbuilt run and charge too, the shamans like pop out that plus three to movement bubble.
Yeah.
The whole army having run and charge and plus three to move. Like people underestimate how fast it is too. I think Beasts of Chaos are awesome.
Yeah.
They're super quick. And I honestly just took the army because I love the models. Like my Free People army is such a dick punch. Like crazy. It's not even really very fun to play against for most people. It's just a hardcore tournament list. And so I was like, man, I want to get it. I want an army that's like fun.
Yeah.
For both people, and then it turns out it's also just really good at the missions.
And I find that to be stronger lists to take to tournaments, because like the ones that just can like beat face but they lose on objectives, like you're not gonna win. And so it's, I think a really solid army is one where you get destroyed but win on the mission, because that's just how you win.
And my Free People army struggles to go get objectives, but it'll blow you off the table. Like I still don't know why more people don't play Free People. That army is so brutal.
Well, you're not technically playing Free People because you need the Grand Alliance Order, since you're taking too many artillery, right?
Technically it's an order army, but when the Free People army or battle tome comes out, I'm willing to bet all that stuff gets incorporated back in. And then of course you have your Celestial Hurricanum and all that stuff.
That has been the trend with like the last few battle domes. They've kind of been pulling all that small stuff back together, which is awesome.
It's so much more fun, dude. Like the only reason I don't take Flagellants is because I can't, right? Like I've already taken all my ally points with the Celestial Hurricanum. Really good.
Be a great unit
for the points, but it's like when you have a faction with three units in it, I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Some of them don't even have characters.
Right? You know, it's funny. I look at a list like this, and it seems to me that it's one of those armies that, you know, it's real fast. You're going to get in people's face very quick. But it definitely needs a turn to kind of to get the buffs and all of that going. Do you find you're a little susceptible if somebody gets the drop on you and can kind of get that first top of the turn charge? Is it kind of lights out for you? You got something that'll come back from that,
because the silly Herdstone is so ridiculously good.
Yeah.
So oh, my right. my units will
now.
Break.
What does that do again? Can you give me a reminder?
It makes you unbreakable, and then your opponents have -1 to their save, and the aura grows every turn. So it's like I usually start with a giant blob of Ungors and Dragon Ogres who are rock hard. They're super tough. And so and I just have them advance forward with the aura every turn. And they basically play defense. And then I have my hard-hitting units either go up a flank or stand behind them. And I am by no means an expert player. I'm still ramping up with AOS. But in my game so far, I haven't lost yet. I haven't even come close to losing yet. Even when I get hit with like...
Wow. That's pretty solid. Yeah, I guess with that stone in the back in your backfield, it really doesn't matter. It's like, yeah, the aura grows, but if you charge me turn one, my aura is like, right here.
It doesn't matter. No, I was just saying it's like I get hit with like super like plague monks and stuff and like, oh, you killed like 20 of my Ungors. I'm like, whatever, I don't care. And I just get gunk you up with guys. And then every turn, there's like 10 more bodies coming on the table.
Mm. Oh, yeah, bringing those bodies in. Oh, that's so brutal.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you're still ramping up with AOS. Speaking of that, kind of like as an overall idea. So the AOS ITC, this is the third year, right?
Yes.
Okay. So this is the third year overall. I was a fantasy player for years and years and years. I think several of us were. And the fantasy competitive scene was always kind of a tricky beast to deal with, I think. There were like single big tournaments kind of sporadically placed around the country, but there wasn't really any like large organized circuits per se. The AOS scene in my area, at least in the Pacific Northwest, has just been growing like crazy. We have monthly RTTs up here that are averaging 20 players. There's 5 GTs in the Pacific Northwest between Spokane, Portland, and Seattle a year. They just added a 6th actually in Moscow, Idaho. So there's the scene up here is just going nuts, and it's awesome to see. I don't know, from your standpoint, kind of overlooking all of that, does that seem to be a trend that carries through mm-hmm. like the whole scene, or is it growing as quickly everywhere as it seems to be here?
Yeah, and Garrett could really lend a lot of data on this, but the ITC, the game in general has gone crazy because AOS is such a fun game, and the General's Handbook, as we all know, is the silver bullet that just made it go red hot, and obviously 40K has gone bananas. We're at the point now where like looking at the ITC and seeing how many events, using that as a measuring stick, it's insane. We had 12,000 active participants last year, and this year we're going to hit as many events as we had last year in like 6 months. It's crazy. You know, like Garrett, how many events do we have in the ITC per weekend now? It's close to, it's like what, 150, 160 a week.
In the AOS side, it's probably at least 4 to 10 a week.
Right.
I haven't taken a good look at the 40K or the AOS. In the 40K side, I know that in the first 4 weeks, three weeks of the ITC, there was 95 events submitted. So
yeah, it's crazy.
About, it's like 100 to 150 40K events a month in 40K, and probably about 20 or so, 20 to 40 AOS a month submitted. And the number of GTs, like, it was really fun looking at the first year of the ITC and the second year of the ITC for Age of Sigmar, where there was like maybe 3 GTs in the first year, and then in the second year there was like 12 GTs and 2 majors, and like this year there's already like I think there's already scheduled to be like 18 GT level events scheduled before the end of the summer. And then so it's like Age of Sigmar is definitely growing in the ITC, and Age of Sigmar in general, I'm noticing, is growing a lot. Like all of the major events are selling out in hours now.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a wargamer. Like the scene is just red hot and everyone's having fun. And that's one of the cool things about the ITC is it gives an extra layer to your hobby, right? Like for some people, it's not, they don't really care about it, which is totally fine. But for people who are, it gives you like a goal. And for some people, that's really exciting. Like, I want to be the best death player in the Pacific Northwest this year. That's my hobby goal for the year. And then I want to paint a new army or something like that. So it just gives you an extra layer to the whole experience, which is really fun.
I know that sort of layered experience is a lot of what keeps me. And I enjoy tournaments. I enjoy the people, all of that. But to me, it's as you say, the ITC is just another layer of fun in it. And especially someone like myself, you know, I'm rarely going for the top tables, if ever, and definitely not going for the top ITC spot. But, you know, I might be able to pull a faction win off or a local, not in my local area. I got guys like Jeff Robinson local, but I at least could get a faction win out of it and that kind of stuff. And it gives me something to go for. And honestly, even just placing in the ITC, when I look there and see, you know, 10%, 20%, you know, top 20%, top 10%, you know, that feels pretty good too. You know, one thing I've noticed though, you know, as we were, you know, he said third year of the ITC for AOS, and this is what then the sixth year for 40K, I think. I don't know. Yeah. Trying to think of how many LVOs I've been to. And it seems like this year in particular, you know, there's like some legitimacy. You know, it's kind of been a hobby track, a hobby tournament. It's been great. There's a lot of neat things. But this year we have, you know, a ITC certified TO system that's possibly coming out. We're talking, we've got, you know, red flags. We got a code of conduct that came out. We've got some changes to factions, at least on the 40K side. It's always worked that way in AOS. Reese, tell me about some of these stuff. Tell me about being an ITC certified TO.
Yeah, so it's,
talk to me about the
in any
code
system
of conduct.
Like this, as it grows in complexity and really as it becomes more important to the people that are participating in it, you have to take these steps. And it's, we went and looked at like ASO soccer, poker, all like any other similar kind of organization, organizational system. They all go through these steps. Magic,
oh, interesting,
has really similar steps that they went through on the process of becoming a more legitimate and structured competitive circuit, and it's all a natural part of the process. But the certified judges, basically, that is a program that we're still ramping up. The beginning of the season is always really crazy for us, but basically, you'll take a test as a judge that we create. And then we'll go like, we'll give you a stamp. Okay, you're a certified ITC judge. And then your event can advertise that. And then people coming to the event will know, it'll take away some of the anxiety of like, I have no idea how the ref might make a call. I don't know like the way that they do things. It makes it easier to go to an event because you're like, okay, I know how they're going to make the calls. I know their methodology. I know that it should be a legitimate experience. This is going to be a good judge that takes it seriously. And it's the same as why you have, you know, certified referees when you go play a soccer game or football game or whatever. Like it helps make the event smoother and more enjoyable and more fair for everybody. And the code of conduct came about because, you know, sometimes people at the table behave themselves in ways that aren't representing the hobby in the best light, as we all. Yeah, you know, people do.
Yeah, but
like,
we'll say they
to
get
be blunt,
hangry
they can just
on occasion.
Be shitty sometimes, and they might be totally cool people, but in the heat of the moment, they do something that's unsporting. And previously, we had people that were like continuously displaying this behavior, and there was no mechanism in place to do anything about it. You know, we would just people would say, you know, talk about it online. You know, it'd be open secrets like player X consistently does this. You know, activity that we don't think is good. It shouldn't be present at an event. And we just had to roll out a system that puts a system in place that allows people to do something to curb that behavior. And that's the code of conduct. It's been extremely well received. And basically it's a yellow card, red card system, or three strikes and you're out. You can get two yellows at an event. The third is a red.
Okay.
If you do something really egregious, it's a red. And if you get a red card, you're out of the event. We put your name on the naughty list. All the other TOs that are in the system can see it. It logs your name, what happened, what TO issued the card, and other TOs in the circuit can choose not to let anybody with a red card within a certain amount of time come to their event. So there's real repercussions now. If you're acting like a dick, you're going to get booted. You're not getting your money back. And then you're probably not going to be able to go to other events for, you know, 90.
Very nice. Now, as a TO, you know, I run a lot of local events. In fact, I just submitted my events to Gamecastle this weekend. I have 22 events on the books between now and the LVO. split between 40K and AOS. And though AOS is my my passion that I like to play, 40K, there's a lot of people play it. Still great community, so I like to stay in touch with that. And you know, I look forward to this system, but you know, it comes, for example, that we have a local player who took a red card at a local tournament for, shall we say, some aggressive behavior, in particular, asking somebody to, quote, go outside, as it were, based on something on the table, kind of ridiculous, considering we're playing with little toy men, right? And so this is a person that, that, you know, is basically we're not going to allow, or at least I'm certainly not going to allow into my tournaments for a while, and you would like to see maybe some changes in behavior. So if this person comes and registers for my tournament, how should I handle that? Should I just, you know, refund their money on the minute? Should I keep their money and when they show up at the tournament say, ha ha, you can't come in? Or, you know, what do you think would be the right way to do something like that?
First step is to make sure that everything's posted, right? Like, you want to make sure that your code of conduct, like, okay, we adhere to the code of conduct and make sure that that's visible and present on your website so that there's none of, there's no room for somebody to go, well, like, well, I didn't know XYZ, or how was I supposed to figure this out? So you just want to make sure that that's crystal clear. And then at that point, if the person comes to register, you just pull very politely and professionally, let them know like, hey, you got a red card last time. We're not going to let you come to the next two or three events or whatever you feel is appropriate. But it's also important to always provide a path to redemption. You never want to make somebody feel like they're forever permanently ostracized unless they did something like they punched somebody or, you know, it'd have to be a really egregious offense to do
like
that.
A legal level event, offense or something.
Right. Like if someone just cursed at somebody and they lost their nerve, it's like, you're not coming to the next two events. But if you can show us that you've taken the correct steps and you really want to improve, there's always a road to redemption, right? Like it's important for people to feel like they can redeem themselves.
Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of this build up in the many of the discussions, and a lot of it seems to be focused in the like 40K community. A lot of the 40K tournament organizers are participating in this discussion. So as far as like the official tournament organizer record, forget what it's called, are you looking to roll that out in the AOS as well, like the official TO test and stuff?
Yeah,
certified TO, that's what it was.
Yeah, we sure are. It's just, we have limited staff, and right now the ITC is growing so fast that we're literally struggling to just keep up with everything, and that's why we're rolling out another program, and that's the regional rep program, which we had a bunch of people sign up for, which is great. And basically we're going to be delegating responsibility to people to like be the rep for the ITC for their area. It's usually going to be a state or a province. And then they'll be the one that issues tokens, answers questions. They'll be the first one. If like, oh, if player X did something naughty, they'll be the first one to talk to them and go like, okay, does this need to go further up the chain or not? And that's going to help a ton to just make everything run smoother. But yeah, like kind of a long answer, but we will get that, get there for AOS, but we're just trying to get all the systems in place, make sure they work, and then we can replicate them and move them forward with the other systems.
Now, do you have a time goal on all this? I mean, are you to get it like all ironed out by the end of the season, maybe, or mid season, or whenever it happens, it happens? What are you thinking there?
I'm hoping we can get it done like in the next couple months. For the judge program, the only thing left to do is write the test. The regional rep program, we've already got everybody's applications. I'm just slogging through them.
Yeah.
And we'll start delegating those out like this week. And then as soon as we can get the systems in place and make sure that they're working correctly, then we can replicate it and use it for, you know, Shadespire, Kill Team, AOS, all the other systems too.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, the ITC has been, and at least it has its starts, you know, very deeply rooted in 40K. And I know that you used to play Warhammer Fantasy Battle, and you know, obviously you play a lot of 40K with your performance this last weekend at Broadside Bash. But when we do take a look at, you know, the ITC and the future of the ITC within Age of Sigmar, you know, the road ahead is... you know, pretty bright just because there are so many different players that are increasingly going to Age of Sigmar events. A lot of people, even in this podcast, were converts who play a little bit of 40K, a little bit of AOS, but definitely started with 40K. How do you feel the road looks ahead for Age of Sigmar in terms of some of the larger ITC events too, like LVO, the Bay Area Open, which just now added Age of Sigmar, and then things like SoCal Open as well?
Yeah, I think it's really bright. I mean, because people oftentimes are like, oh, like why, like, you know, 40K is, you know, so much bigger or whatever. And I'm like, you got to remember that Age of Sigmar is like a baby of a game. It's brand new and it's already grown tremendously. It's already the second biggest miniatures game in the world behind 40K. It supplanted X-Wing and War Machine. So it's like the growth it's had is ridiculous. It's phenomenal. So the game is going ham. I think it still has some like balance concerns that need to be addressed, but generally speaking, it's a super fun game and the models are ridiculously good. So I see it just continuing to grow at an exponential pace, right? In three or four more years, Age of Sigmar is probably going to be very close in size to 40K, in my opinion.
So I do have a quick question for you. I do hear from a lot of the like majority 40K community, I hear a couple of like general gripes about AOS. One of them, again, coming from like majority 40K players, is that the game is unbalanced. And then the other one that I don't hear as much anymore, but I used to hear a lot, is that like the game is too easy, or they dumbed it down, or it was too simple or whatever. So I know several other people on this podcast and myself, we generally kind of focus on like competitive Age of Sigmar. So we play it competitively. That's how we get our enjoyment out of the game. I find, having played both games, I personally believe actually Age of Sigmar has a better competitive rule set than 40K does. I see more unbalance in 40K than I do in Age of Sigmar. Very, very, very rarely at large tournaments do you see blowout games that are just completely one-sided. So I don't know, where do you think the overlap is there, that there seems to be like a bad stigma about Age of Sigmar being so unbalanced?
For coming from the perspective of somebody that is like predominantly a 40K player, but I play Age of Sigmar quite a bit. I've been playing a lot lately. Thankfully, I've had the time to actually get in and get quite a few competitive games in. For me, the issue with Age of Sigmar, the thing that makes me feel like there's balance issues is the balancing factor in that game is that most of the missions are really good, and it does not matter how lethal your army is, because it's all about just taking and holding objectives. So that balances out some of the inequities between armies being powerful. So if you're just a smart player and you put your models in the right place, you're usually going to win the game. And that's exactly the way it should be. But in Age of Sigmar, oftentimes I'll find like a preponderance of mortal wounds, crazy shooting, which again, I don't know why more people aren't doing it, where you can just annihilate big chunks of your opponent's army and they can do nothing about it. And it's like devastating power. Like Stormcast Eternal's really good example of that, where they can just hit anything on the table with mortal wounds. It doesn't matter if you're hiding or if you've deployed well, it's just you're rolling dice and picking up models, which that always annoys the shit out of me. And I don't like it when that kind of thing is in 40K either. But in AOS, I find that there's quite a bit of it, or like being able to like recycle giant units for free that are extremely powerful. And you're like, what the hell is this? But there, it appears strongly that GW is aware of the issues and they're trying to play whack-a-mole and take care of them as we go.
Yeah. I just didn't know if you thought it was like an actual decent size issue, or if it was maybe just like a, I don't know, not enough information being shared. Cause like I said, I tend to find at least like around the top tables of Age of Sigmar tournaments, there's very rarely heavily one-sided or lopsided games. It seems to be pretty.
I still see people get the double turn and close it, which is annoying. That's always like, I'm still like not fully sold on the double turn mechanic, and talking to the game devs, like they call it the Marmite rule. And it was funny, cause I was like, what's Marmite? But it's a spread you put on bread, but yeah, they're like, people either they either hate it or they love it. And it's like, I've seen so many times, and like, perhaps I'm not a good enough player to truly understand how to mitigate it. But I've seen so many times, especially with newer players, where they're playing the game, the other guy gets a double turn, smashes them, the game's over, and they're like, that was so dumb. like, why do we even play that?
I think the double turn truly is the litmus test for whether or not like 40K or Age of Sigmar is going to be good for a 40K player. I mean, you know, I myself had to take a lot of time just figuring out, you know, if I get first turn or if I get second turn, how to play in a way where if I get the double turn, fantastic. But if I get double turned, I'm not going to just immediately lose the game. So I feel like there's two levels of caution you then have to play. But, you know, I know other 40K players as well who, when trying the same situation, just, you know, threw their hands up and went, okay, you know what? I'm not doing this. This is dumb. This is smashing the middle hammer and I'm not enjoying it. So.
Yeah, I mean, the double turn to me is one of those things where when I first started playing, again, I didn't like it. And then I went to a period of time where I actually really did like it. And then I kind of shifted back to not really liking it, but for different reasons. Like, I actually prefer to not have the double turn for the opposite reasons of you being able to smash a player. But because when you're given a bad double turn, it's really bad if, like, you're going second and you play reserved, expecting your opponent to come at you, and then they just give you a double turn. And you're like, well, crap, I just wasted a whole turn. So I actually didn't like the double turn for that. But at this point, just one of those things where it's like, I've played with the double turn for so long, I'm just kind of desensitized. And I just know how to deal with it. I know how to like handle a bad double turn and know how to take advantage of a good double turn. I prefer not to have it, but it doesn't bother me anymore.
Well, I don't know about play around it though. I think what you really have to do is you have to play enough to accept it as part of the game and include it in your tactics. So that's what I see the younger players are hoping for the double turn, but the more experienced players are controlling the double turn. Even things like taking the bottom of the top turn so you decide when the double turn happens. A lot of times I'm finding myself giving the double turn to my opponent early game, right? Because it's maybe not going to damage me, but then setting myself up to then get it late game because of that. Or just letting them have it once and then not allowing it to happen again.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of times I will knowingly say I'm going for the double turn. Like, I've just looked at everything and I gamble on it. Go, I'm going for the double turn, and if I fail, I will give up, because it's like at the end of like turn four or whatever, it's a really close game, but I know that if I need the double turn, and I'll do that. But then I won't like blame the double turn. I'll just be like, well, I went for it, I gambled for it, and I lost. It was an active decision I made.
It was a Hail Mary at that point.
Yeah, exactly. I'll use the double turn as like it's a tool for me. It's like, yes, I'm gambling for it, yes, I have like a 44% chance of getting it, but I will go for that. And then it's like, I'll get it and I'll be able to turn this game around. So I use it as a tool. I still would prefer not to have the double turn. I think it would change my mindset of how I approach the game.
But how much would that change AOS? Because I'm with everybody here, you know. And again, when I talk to new players, especially folks coming over for 40K, the double turn, or really it's not the double turn, it's the turn priority roll off that really seems to stick with people. Yet at the same time, if we were to go to pure back and forth roll priority at the beginning of the game and you only do it once, does something else have to change in this game, or does this game become too static? Is this a dynamic mechanism we need?
Yes.
Go.
Yes, and here's why. I want to explain this, because I always tell people the reason I like the double turn is because you cannot have the same game plan for every game. So in 40K, if you know what your game plan is at the beginning of the game, you can do it with no fear of something happening to like cause repercussions. So if I'm saying I want to drop down and alpha strike the shit out of you and I have first turn, I can do that with there's nothing bad that can happen back, because you can't do anything back to me. I can drop down, alpha strike you, and then you get one turn back and I know that's it and I get to go again. So I think it's a better balancer, honestly, because alpha striking someone top of turn one in Age of Sigmar can be really dangerous, because yeah, you may drop down and take half of someone's army off the table, and then they can double turn you back, and vice versa. If you get bottom of turn, it's the same thing. You can say, well, I can play reserved here and play defensive, but if I don't get or if I get given the double turn, then I'm just wasting time. So I don't know. I like it personally, because you don't have the certainty of being able to say, I'm going to do this and it's going to work, because I know I get to go again.
Yes.
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 As a counterpoint to that, Like, it's like, oh, you get Alpha Struck, and then I have a 50-50 chance of getting the double turn on turn two, and then I get to dick punch you in reverse. But then at the same time, like with my Free People army, I always try to go second unless I have to go first. And I cannot tell you how many times the game is over that when I get the double turn on turn two and I shoot you with four Hellstorm rocket batteries twice, and it's like, goodbye. Like, and I'm just like, yeah, you're
isn't your Free People's army like 14 drops?
Oh yeah, I always lose. Like, and most people choose to go first.
Whoever is giving you the option for a double
turn.
Yeah,
most people choose to go first because like, oh, I need to cover ground to get across the table. But if they let me go first, I'm still shooting the shit out of them.
There's a lot of ways you can mitigate that with deployment. It's like you're 14 drops, Reese. So it's like I can put my valuable A with the new lookout sword rules. I'm giving you a minus one to hit, so you're not hitting nearly as much against like a lot of my heroes.
Which, that's not a very good rule either. you're not telling me on it being more balanced.
Counterpoint though here. Yes, that is a dumb rule. Yes, it's powerful.
Hey, I resent night one. Man, I resent that. It takes so much skill for command point to bring my 30 Reapers back.
That's always the macro. That's the macro micro argument, right? Like, just because one thing is broken, like for example, as an analogy in 40K, mental onslaught is ass over head broken. You can auto kill anything in the game with it, right? Like, you can kill a Imperator Titan without rolling any dice because of a rules oversight, and it's like that is clearly objectively bad and broken. But if you look at the stats, Gene Stealer Colts aren't winning every single tournament. That doesn't mean that rule is not bad and broken and needs to be changed. You know, like.
Right. Yeah. And I think the issue more than being overpowered is just causing like feel bads.
Bad play experience.
Yeah. You can have a rule that may not be winning games for you, but if it's giving your opponent a bad time.
Yeah. We brought up the double turn here, and I do have I was wondering. Reese, I know that you don't seem too happy about the double turn itself, which is completely understandable.
Honest, for the record, I'm like 70-30 on it. I'm just kind of like, eh.
That's fair. I'm relatively 50-50 on it. Like, I can keep it or I can take it or leave it. And I do think it's really interesting, the new Games Workshop community survey in the Age of Sigmar portion, they literally ask people what they thought of the double
turn. It's good that they're collecting data, right? Like, it's such a good change from the way that they used to do things. And it's like, if it does end up, when I wouldn't be surprised at all if it was like a landslide, like, I fucking hate the double turn. But then unfortunately, a lot of those people are going to be people that are not regular AOS players. I wouldn't be surprised to see the wind blow that direction. Because the only people I talk to that really like it.
Yeah, totally fair.
Or people that played AOS once or twice, got double turned and were like, this is so stupid. And never played it again. And that happens. That's really common, right? Like the most common conversation I have with people who are like, I don't like AOS. 99% of the time, it's like, I hate the double turn.
Yeah, and that perspective, it's a problem because anything like that that gives a feel badsy to the, quote, new player is now a barrier for entry.
Exactly. And the only people that I talk to that like it are veteran, skilled players. That's it, ever.
Well, some of us.
Right. Like, because my job obviously is in community engagement.
So all of us.
So I'm always talking to people from all different communities and stuff. Like, okay, what do you like this? What do you like that? Blah, blah, blah. And then without question, when I talk to people who are like, I tried AOS and I don't play it, that is the reason given.
So I have a question for you, again, related to ITC stuff. With the like prevalence that's been happening with like media related stuff around Warhammer, so like live streaming, podcasts, Twitch streams, all that stuff, do you see, or are you hoping for, or do you envision at some point, whether it's 5, 10, 20 years, whatever, Warhammer heading towards like an esports style thing? Is that kind of like the pipe dream for Warhammer for you? Or
100%. Yeah, we've been really open about that forever, because people like us that are, you know, we're adults. Some of us have kids, and congratulations, Matt, on the new baby.
Thank you. We have 100 now.
Are you working on 101?
And it, for people like us at this stage of life, like, we're lifers. We're going to be doing this until we're dead, right? And it's a big deal. It's a big deal to people like us. It's a part of our lifestyle. So I totally, what was the question? I'm sorry. I started thinking about 100 babies and it totally threw me off.
Yeah, basically just kind of, because I know it's kind of like it's been spoken about on the Honest Wargamer a lot lately, to the
pro gaming, right?
Kind of trying to build some sort of
That's 100%
like a professional. Yeah, exactly. Professional like esports.
That's 100% the goal. Circuit. And we've been saying it since 5th edition, and everybody thought it was a pipe dream. They were crazy. Blah blah blah. Now people are starting to see that the pieces are coming together, and that it's not only possible, that it's probable, that it is probably going to happen. What shape it takes, I couldn't say. To what degree people will be able to supplement their income, I couldn't say. But it's evident that it's on the horizon, right? Like, we were just at Riot Games hanging out with those guys, and like, they all were like they're like, oh yeah, obviously this is what's happening. They're like, there's so many parallels between what's happening with the game and the ITC and the proliferation of events and social media and what happened with League of Legends. They were like pointing out all the parallels and talking to people who already made that dream come true. It's really encouraging and exciting to see, like, okay, cool. Like, we're not just, this isn't just some crazy fantasy. Like, it's something that's very realistic.
Yeah. There's also a lot of similarities between how the Magic the Gathering pro circuits developed and where 40K currently is.
And the big Magic event that just occurred had like 50, 60, I think it might have even been 70,000 concurrent viewers watching it. And that's huge, right? Those are really big numbers. And it's a little trickier to like make it interesting to watch because it moves slowly and it's very cerebral. But I think if we can overcome those hurdles and make it really fun to watch, like poker is a boring ass game, but they've made it super exciting to watch. And now the World Series of Poker and the Professional Poker League is huge, right?
So, and basically, we just need to play Street Hammer and bet thousands of dollars in games.
Well, it's also that, but it's, you know, it's player profiles. So you have, you know, drop-in interviews during slow parts of the game.
Math.
You have unit focus type things. You have little mathematical thing that pops up and breaks down the odds for everybody. You 100%. Know, those kinds of things, too. But, I mean, I'm sorry, but that's what makes watching poker tournaments fun, too, right? It's the color commentary. It's the interesting characters. It's getting the little bios, and then it's these breakdowns.
There's a lot of
sort of,
I mean,
pro level thought processes for the layman as we're watching. Makes us
talk about watching a slow
right, exactly.
Oh yeah,
exactly.
We now lose all of our golf listeners,
and that's because I always tell people when people are negative and they're like, it'll never go pro. 40K is boring. Blah blah blah. And I'm like, do you feel excited and engaged when you're playing the game? Yes. All we have to do is convey to the watcher that emotional state, and that's, you did it. Like, you nailed it. If they feel those feelings of excitement, oh, what's going to happen? I can't believe it. And then you rolled the 2 when you should have rolled, you know, anything else. And then the improbable event occurs, and there's this big emotional outburst. Mm-hmm. And if they feel that feel while watching it, you did.
And, you know, just like with esports, though, a lot of that is kind of getting tied into specific players or specific teams. You know, it's like, oh, hey, there's Jeff, man. He's my favorite. I'm going to go crazy with everything he's doing, right? So it's that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, because the Riot guys were like, it's all about showing the path to the aspirational path, how like average Joe can become a pro. They're like, that's the most interesting story you can tell. And I was like, that makes sense to me.
Interesting. I think that's a lot of why we do the bio, or they do the bios and stuff too, because it humanizes these people to us. So they become somebody we care about.
It's always that quest to achieve the goal. And that's exciting. And it's a cool, compelling story, right? Like, that's the kind of thing that makes you excited.
There is the Warhammer movie that nobody thought of. Everyone thinks of like an anime or something set in the Warhammer universe. But no, we're going to track an aspiring tournament player through his ins and outs, you know, and his rise from an RTT level high school guy to a serious pro in his 30s. It would be amazing.
Right. That'd be a cool story. Right. And
It would.
I think it's a totally achievable goal. I think it's a complicated and difficult long-term goal, but I think it's something that is inevitably going down.
When I bring that up, people say like, yeah, maybe 50 years down the road or whatever. I see that happening in, I don't know, 5-7 years.
Oh yeah. No, I see it much sooner. It's like 3 to 5 years out, in my opinion.
3 to 5 years sounds realistic. I mean, like Reese mentioned earlier, it's like, to what degree can someone supplement their own income that way is questionable, but you know, it's not going to be a complete replacement. Like, you're not going to see someone do, you know, 40K or AOS as a full-time job, but you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, not bad. Pay some.
Yeah, maybe a couple sponsorships, some prize money, and you know, something like that. Maybe a hobby product.
Our goal was like, if you could get your hobby for free, including travel expense, and be a pro player, that's a very realistic and achievable goal, and it's a worthwhile goal. But the thing is, if we can get enough people to pay attention and watch, then real money gets involved, and then the sky's the limit. Then who knows where it could go?
And you know, I think the spectator aspect can go beyond gamers. I know it's a funny thing, but I'm very open about my nerdhood, as it were. You know, don't hide things. So I talk to my coworkers. I show them pictures of minis, whatever, right? And most people, you know, if you engage them properly, they find what we're doing fascinating. They don't understand it if they haven't played it. But you know, you start showing the minis, you start talking a little bit of the theme, the universe, people get excited. It is an interesting universe. So, I mean, I don't play a lot of golf, but I'll still watch a little on TV on the right day. So, you know.
For my Warhammer team.
Hey, we had Red Bull at the first BAO. We had Red Bull girls walking around.
I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like all you have to do is show them that you can give them a big enough audience to make it worth their while. It's actually not that complicated, right? It's just difficult building the momentum to get there.
Well, certainly the LVO has a lot of momentum at this point. Boy, when we were there earlier this year, what an amazing event. I mean, every year it's been awesome, but my gosh, this year it was huge. I was blown away.
Yeah, it's really, really hit a new, a different gear. And we just actually signed a contract on an even bigger venue, like significantly bigger venue. Hoping to get there for 2021. It might not happen until 2022 because we're trying to negotiate with another event to work with us. But so we're going to be at Bally's again for 2020 for sure, possibly 2021. But then by 2022 at the latest, the 1,000-man 40K tournament will be absolutely be a thing. And AOS, we could go as big as there is an audience for. The growth on the AOS side has been, it's been crazy. Like, everybody talks about the 40K championships event because, you know, almost 800 people is unprecedented. But the AOS event at the LVO has been growing at a huge rate, and it's just a matter of time before it becomes 200, 300, 400.
I mean, obviously that number is a lot smaller, but percentage wise, just in 1 year, you went from like 80 to
193 to 128.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
It's 50.
That's huge growth.
It's 50% growth. And if we do that again next year, then we're going to be pushing 200, and then we're going to be pushing 300. You know what I mean? So it's just a matter of time, right? Like, the game's awesome. It's brand new. The player base is still very small compared to 40K. And the fact that there's events as big as they are so soon is incredible. Like, people should not be comparing the two to each other. It's not a fair comparison.
No, like you said, AOS is still, you know, people want to tie it back to fantasy, but it's really not fantasy. It's a whole new game. Whereas 40K has existed as 40K for decades at this
over
point.
Over 30 years.
The one cool thing I would say that I've noticed, at least in my local area, is I'm seeing a lot of new blood in Age of Sigmar that have never played 40K or Warhammer.
That's Fantasy. Fantastic.
They're just straight up new to everything, and they're jumping right into Age of Sigmar first.
Well, the models will pull people in, that's for sure.
The miniatures are brilliant. Exactly. They're so good. So,
You know, getting back to events, of course, the next big frontline gaming event that we have coming up is the BAO coming up this May 25th and 26th up there at the KublaCon convention. And this is I don't know how big a move it is, but it is a change in how the BAO has been ran. It's spent a few years over the hill in the barn and then a couple years at the Game Castle and probably outgrew the Game Castle even the first year it was there. So now going to KublaCon, how we said, we have a lot of space there. How are things looking? Tell me a little about what's going on and what led to this decision.
Yeah, so we had a great relationship with Game Castle, but as you said, like we've maxed it out the first year and there's no room for growth. But the Bay is so ungodly expensive that running an event there is just throwing money out the window. But then the KublaCon approached us and they're like, hey, we expanded KublaCon. We need to fill space. You know, you guys can put butts in chairs. You know, do you want to work with us? And we were like, yeah, because it gave us an avenue for growth because the BAO was not going to grow otherwise. And it was the right choice. And now it's a 4-day event. You don't have to go for all 4 days, obviously, but it allows us to run like a proper super, I don't want to call it a con, it's in a convention, but like a super tournament, so to speak. Like now we have narrative events and we have team events and we have singles events, 1-day events, 2-day events, 3-day events. So it's going to be a lot more like the LVO in regards to the offerings of events. But obviously it's not as big, but it's still not yet, but
congratulations.
It's still going to be huge, right? It's going to be one of the bigger events, on the West Coast, certainly, and in for 40K Champs, yeah. Especially, it'll be one of the bigger events. That's great. In the country.
Awesome.
Okay.
That is fair.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast.
Yeah,
and I have a feeling.
Oh yeah, and of course, this year is the first year that you're offering Age of Sigmar at the Bay Area Open. So pretty excited for that. It should be a lot of fun. KublaCon has always been one of those really fun kind of conventions. I'm sure you've been to it before with Kubla running around and convention-wide cheers, lots of miniature gaming. That's in years past, I've gone there and played all kinds of different miniature games, especially a lot of one-off stuff. So overall, I'm really looking forward to this. And now it seems like you said they expanded. So previously, I think they were only in the Hyatt Regency, and now they're also taking over the Crown Plaza.
Yeah.
And so the stuff that you're putting on is all going to be in the Crown Plaza. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, the events that we are running, John, actually, we're basically taking up the whole hotel. That side of it is going to be all miniatures games. So it's going to be us. Oh, wow. And then there's also Bolt Action and we added Kill Team. But yeah, it's basically just going to be us running that side of the event, but it's a really fun event too. Like anybody that hasn't been, it's a very long running, very well established and cool con just to go check out for nerd culture.
They got the Kubla bucks that you earn as you do different things, win different tournaments or participate. You go spend at the Kubla store to get various miniatures and
Matthew,
stuff.
Matthew, you had a question?
Yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah, I think we'll all be there. I think we're all going to be there playing Age of Sigmar. Garrett, will you be there?
I will not be there. The flight across the country is quite a lot, and I said earlier, I just bought a house, so the wife will not be letting me so quickly after getting a home fly to BAO. I am going to a local GT in my area that weekend, though. It is a sold out 32 man event, so I'm excited for that. Are you going though, Matt?
We will be there. We have a lot of events lined up. Actually, Alex and I will be at the Riptide GT in just a couple weeks. I think we usually end the episodes with doing like a unit overview, but I think we are a little pressed for time. So Reese, what is your favorite Warhammer Age of Sigmar unit?
Oh my gosh. So my favorite unit, I'm going to go with a combination of aesthetics and rules, is the Free People General on the...
So good, I have four of them.
That's such a badass model. I love it.
It is beautiful.
That is a gorgeous model.
He's the same guy who brought three at SoCal Open too.
It's funny. That is the first Warhammer model that I ever built, probably close to 22 years ago now, when I first met my wife, Donna, I met her at a Dungeons and Dragons game, and my elf ranger was able to capture a griffin. So I built that model to make Spiffy the griffin my my pet.
Yeah.
It's an amazing model.
Yeah, it's so
the sculpt has certainly changed in 20 years, but yeah.
Yes, really, has it? Oh man, that's it. I got to do another one now.
So, Reese, I was wondering, before we finish up, are there any Age of Sigmar major events that you're planning to go to in the near future? Like, are you going to come out here for Nova? Are you planning on going to a plethora of the GTs that are coming up? Like, there's the Forge and Wet Coast and all those. Are you planning on attending any Age of Sigmar events this year?
Yeah, I'm going to go to as many as I can. The main issue for me right now is that my army's not painted. And again,
Matthew, get on that.
Thank you, Matt, for helping. But as soon as I, because I'm speed painting it because it's a high model count army. But as soon as I get to the point where I can actually like go to an event and participate, I'll start scheduling them out. But right now, it's just I'm going really slowly.
So maybe 2020 is your year for AOS.
I'll be playing at local events for sure because you don't have to be painted. And I wanted to play it at Adepticon, but I didn't buy a ticket in time. So I was pretty bummed out about that. At Nova, I'll probably be playing 40K because they overlap.
Yep, right.
You can't play both, which is a bummer. I wish they would do one.
The AOS sold out over there, too.
So.
Yeah, it's all sold out.
Well, Chuck runs a good event.
It's a good event. I'll be judging there, so I won't be playing.
He does a good job, and he's super prevalent in the community. Like, he's always tweeting, and, you know, like, it doesn't surprise me in the slightest that it sold out. 40K sold out in a day, too, for them.
It was, I think, 1 hour for 40K and 3 hours for Age of Sigmar to sell out.
That's crazy. It's a good time to be a gamer, man.
Good time to run gaming conventions.
Yes, it is. We are rolling right up on an hour. Does anybody want to get in a last word real quick, Reese? Do you have any plugs, things you want to mention?
Awesome. Just please come out and get a ticket for the BAO and the SoCal Open. We're having Age of Sigmar there as well. And if anybody is curious about coming, they're really, really fun events and well run. And I hope to see everybody there.
I will be at both. If anyone wants to hear any terrible jokes, they are free of charge.
Nice.
Hey, thanks for coming on, Reese. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. Thank you for having me, guys.
Of course, we're more than happy to have you anytime. For our listeners out there, the Bay Area Open is going to be on the 25th and the 26th of May. Reese, when is the SoCal Open?
It's the weekend before Halloween, which I think it's the
October 26th and 27th.
That's correct, yeah. And it's in Del Mar, California, which is like one of the prettiest cities. It's when people that are not from California think of California, this is what you think of.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful. Well, thank you for taking the time to be with us today, and we'll be sure to be at Bay Area Open and the SoCal Open. For our listeners out there, feel free to comment on our Facebook post for this episode, and be sure to review us wherever you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to listen to both the 40K and the X-Wing podcasts for this week's episode recordings. Have a great night.
Winning is not a sometime thing, it's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.